Walker Knight, we're back again. 1 week later, we saw another movie. We being the same trio as last time. This is Rylan.
Hi, it's Jen.
And Mark.
Yeah, I just didn't want to introduce
him
again.
We're not as dynamic as Rylan.
No, I am Bob Barker to your pretty ladies. You are a pretty lady. Anyways, we saw was Waltz with Bashir. We saw it in San Francisco at the Embarcadero Landmark, part of the San Francisco Film Society's presentation of the third annual
International Film Festival.
Yeah, a lot of words there. I saw it in Telluride, as Vinyl as Heavy's fans may know. And I like it. I see a lot of things in it that I like. It's troubling, you know. I think it's a compromised movie in a few places, but it's really interesting. Really, really, I think, a good thing to talk about. So why don't we do that? It's also really interesting because Jen had kind of the opposite reaction that I had to the big formal shift right at the very end of the film, which I talked about in my essay about. I said it's not really a Kiarostami coda, and it's not the thing I liked that I wrote, if I can brag a bit, is talking about the human as a glitch, because the video combs through the bodies. It doesn't really, I mean, it's troubling representation, as everything, or not everything, but a lot of things in this movie are concerned with that problem. So, I mean, I got, you know, lit up by that. I think it's an interesting move, but we're going to start there, I think, at the very end. And I'm going to turn it over to Jen to talk about a little bit about her reaction and how we sort of moved from that into talking about it. Because it was really fruitful. We could have recorded our conversation on Bart coming home, but, you know, that's...
you could say this is even better because now we can just talk about that as a process.
Yeah.
It is great. I had a really... I felt really uncomfortable and I felt held hostage by those images at the end. And like the feeling in the theater was palpable. Like there was no sound. Everyone was shocked. Mm-hmm. And I really resented that when it was happening. I kind of felt betrayed by the film. And I was hungry and cranky. And so we left, and my first reaction was like, I don't even want to talk about this film. Like that was bullshit. And like, I don't even want, but we left, and you know, like when you have to account for that kind of reaction, you're immediately of course faced with it as a reaction and not as reflected. So then the process of having to think through it and think past it is always more interesting. So I think what's sticking in my mind, Ryland asked me right before we started if we could start there, which it was interesting you even asked for permission, right? Because it's like a touchy sort of thing. And what I want to say about that is this thing we were talking about a few minutes ago, about how like the stakes go up. The more you talk about movies and the more you want to be able to say something interesting and structured and, you know, I've just found in the past year, it becomes possible to have really powerful experiences in film that I didn't that I wasn't capable of before.
Yeah.
But then it kind of raises the stakes for any other film, so that when I'm disappointed, it really hurts. And when I don't get like the high that I was expecting to get, I feel like a junkie who's been sold like some bad, you know, and I'm just, you're just like, fuck, that's not how I wanted to feel.
Right.
So, but then, except of course that my mistake, I think, was, I mean, it was still an intense reaction. And because it was uncomfortable and like jarring, doesn't, I mean, I can't blame the film for that. It has to be, because it's still a reaction on the same order as like a joyful or exuberant, you know, joyous reaction. So, and then we like we've having to talk through that, you end up coming up with other things to say about the film that are more interesting, and you find places to like resolve that reaction.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and what were those again?
I don't know much. Maybe Mark knows a few things.
Well, I was going to ask you to explain more how you, what it is about the final images, about that combing through. Like, what exactly about the combing through?
Yeah, because Mark, you weren't too happy with the end either.
I mean, I don't think there's any way you could really be happy when you're seeing that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
bodies.
I talked about this on BART. I'm often suspicious of big shifts in mode at the very end of anything like a book or a poem or a movie, because it becomes about the shift and about like, well, look, this is an important thing. I'm putting it in a different mode.
Right.
But at the same time, and I think Ryland, you said this too, it's like, it's actually not so much in a different mode. I don't think it's not, or at least the ideas that it wants to put forth are really present in the film the whole way through. And I think it does a lot. I mean, there's no way you can be happy that you've seen those things.
No.
But it does a lot to complicate the rest of the film, I think, and complicate representation and the representation of an atrocity.
It seemed like,
I mean, those final images, right before those final images, the camera zoomed up to Ari.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh my, like, so we're going to see the thing that he saw that he's forgot that he knew, right? Remember other characters in the film were talked about how that memory wasn't stored in their system, but of course it was, because that memory doesn't work that way. It's not selective. it's there somewhere. Mm-hmm. The question is how to access it and revive it. So it was like, okay, we're going to see this thing that he, so then the movie, like the negative thing to say about it was that, oh, like the thing he saw, like, oh, we've been like dicking around with animation. Now we're going to show you the real trauma. Now we're going to show you the thing that you couldn't have seen and that he wanted to desperately forget that he saw.
Yeah.
But so my immediate reaction was, like, so we've ended with the trauma. The thing, the premise of the whole movie was how these men had diverted it and channeled it somewhere else. And they were, I thought the movie was going to be about them collectively working through that, but then the movie just ended with like naked, raw, like gruesome, vulgar, pornographic images. And so I was, I need you to tell me how to look at that better.
Right before we started recording, I said, when I saw that movie in Telluride the first time and today, I saw Bergson. Like I'm just an ideas nerd, you know. Like that's why I got turned on by all this philosophy I read in the last 2 years. And I just saw Matter and Memory, that book. And I think if you read my essay after this, if you go back and read that, you'll see that that's pretty big aping of that dude. I guess that's part of Deleuze's argument, too, and Serge Dainey, and that's another thing that really attracted me to the movie, its interest in the ethics of the image, and what, where do we stand within the image, and where do we stand in relation to the image as fascist. Like, you cannot avoid those images at the end of the movie. You're in the dark there, and you're sitting there, and they're going to be in your face.
Yeah, hence held hostage.
Yeah, and they're going to be your memories now. You're going to have that in you for the rest of your life. And that's gross, you know? Like, that terrible image, the final image, is just devastating. You know, it's a little girl's head, just her nose up under rubble with other bodies. It's like a zoom in on her, and it's really sad. I am really tired today, so I was really emotional during the movie, but so that's why your reaction troubled me at first. I was like, well, how can I not feel that way? But so how I think it's consistent with the rest of the film, because the first thing I said when we were standing there on the platform is that footage is video. We got that, right? And the guy that you see walking through that space in the animation right before the switch is a TV journalist, and you see his cameraman walking behind him. And you've seen him before in the film, too, walking with his cameraman. Actually, he's walking standing up, like, straight and tall and beautiful, like Superman. He's walking like Superman, avoiding these bullets. While the camera,
just to not avoid them, right? Just put yourself right in the
eye. Yeah. But while his cameraman is like huddled on the ground, not even filming, but you sort of think the camera's on, or I did. I thought the camera was on. Then he was just like getting terrible footage of the sounds of bullets ripping out this intersection. So I think that motif right there, like you've seen a video camera, that is one way to direct your mind towards this shift. And it's animated, you know, like the first image is that dog, right?
The dog,
it starts in a dream. And so immediately, if you don't know it's a dream, you're just seeing these like scary dogs running through a town, ripping shit up. And so you're already on guard, right? I'm already on guard. I'm like, why is this dance? That's not dance music. It's just kind of weird techno. And these dogs are snarling and it's kind of gross. And then you start hearing voiceover, and you realize it's in a dream. And then, so that's saying, you know, we're going to be accounting for our subconscious here, right? We're going to be accounting for how we're going, how we are and how we have been thinking about this. And so that shift when it goes, that I think it's really, part of it is I think it's just beautiful and powerful. Like the way the camera, the animated camera, I don't know how you want to talk about that, the frame moves from behind this wailing wall of women, moves from behind them, through them. It's not a zoom. It feels like some kind of tracking or pushing through past these women crying, and you start to hear that on the soundtrack. The sound design is really great in this film. Mm-hmm. The score is really great, and it's building with that. I mean, it's also, you know, kind of obvious. There's a lot of stuff that's really obvious in this movie. It's just this move into him, into an animated face, trying, and then they're trying to register all that hurt and confusion in that animated face, and then you get to see what he sees, and you're hearing what he hears, and it's these women devastated. My immediate reaction that I'm trying to account for is that I felt, you know, destroyed by that, and in a productive way. Like I felt, you know, I felt the world. I think I've lost my thread. But I think what I'm trying to say is that the movie is so much about how you're going to be thinking about this whole situation, this weird, terrible lacuna, that it's only asking you to think more. And I like to think more about things. So in a way, it's just wanting to make you mad. But it's not political. It's a weird thing. I feel like I've talked too long, so I want...
One of the things that occurs to me from what you're saying is... Well, I guess two things sort of lead me to this. I mean, like, the dogs in the very beginning are running towards the camera, and there's something like they are attacking... They're attacking you as an audience. They're attacking the viewer. Right. Yeah. And, I mean, one of the... And the other interesting thing you said is that, like, a lot of it is obvious. Mm-hmm. But at the end, it's like... I'm wondering how these guys have diverted this thing that, given the footage we saw, exists in like cultural memory, is documented. It's like you have that empty space, but it's there. It's not like nobody saw it, nobody else saw it, and you blocked it out. It's like it's there, and yet you've somehow. I mean, so I think that the ending of like shoving it in your face is a lot like the dogs, like these things from your past coming and getting you and saying like, these were, this was always here. Like, you can't say that you forget it. Yeah.
That's actually the weird thing about, because those images at the end, I don't think they were even Ari's memory. Like, that was, that's like public I mean, it's like you said, it's the journalist's footage.
Yeah.
So it's not what he saw. It's the documents that survived, which tell the story of that massacre. So not like the, I'm not sure what to do with that in terms of reconciling it with the other documents that the film presented. You know, it's interesting, like, it, Ari doesn't even care. I mean, at the beginning, his friend makes him come out in the middle of the night to talk about his friend's dream about the dogs.
Right.
You know, and Ari's like, I don't really, like...
I'm a filmmaker.
Well, and he's, but he's also like, I don't remember anything about that, about the war.
Yeah.
And his friend's like, what? And so he's like, I don't know what to tell you about the dog dream, you know, whatever. But then he's like, wait, how come I don't remember anything? So then he tries to track down everyone who he thinks was there with him. And notice how those, like, the stories that those people gave of what they remembered never helped, like, never helped him.
Yeah.
They, and they were actually often, it, most of them were made up too. Like his friend Carney?
Carmi?
I think it's an name. His, like, the memory he gave was itself a hallucination. Remember? And, like, the other guy told you it was about him in the water swimming away.
Yeah.
So it was, like, also not about the battles. So I think the film was really, and I was really into it when the film wanted these to be legitimate documents of those wars. And so that's why I don't understand the end.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's troubling his own argument, which is itself troubled from the beginning. I mean, another thing we were talking about is his friend who has the terrible dream about the dog says, well, can't films be therapeutic?
Yeah.
And so we started talking about what is, what kind of therapy might film offer, as any experience might offer. And since I'm an ideas nerd, my immediate reaction is just to think about Wittgenstein and his project of, you know, philosophy as therapeutic. But, you know, philosophy is also arrogant and, but I mean, he hasn't.
Well, no, that's helpful because, okay, so as I remember, we, like Wittgenstein's idea of philosophy as therapy was to get you to see that the questions you were asking had assumptions in the first place that were tripping you up.
Right.
And so, and it was the way that you were asking questions that was for, like, forcing you into a panicked realization that you didn't have the answer when it was all about the frame of the question in the first place.
Right.
So he tries to reorientate you to the question, not to the lack of an answer. So that, so and I like, yeah, and remember, and we were talking about how, the, for me, the film as therapy is actually, again, to confront me as a junkie. You know, it's like, film isn't just going to give you, like, bliss and joy. I mean, you, once you accept those kinds of experiences, you open yourself up more to profound kinds of disappointment and hurt. So, and the trick there is that those are still on a on par in terms of energy and intensity.
Yeah, no.
Right?
We're...
So again, it's like gets you to see like frustration and being perplexed and like bliss and joy as actually sort of the same experience. So then the film is therapy to help these, so I mean therapy to help them recover their memory. Like it's almost suggesting that Ari thinking that he needed to recover the memory was the question that had to be rethought.
Yeah.
Because although again, it's like what we get at the end is not memory. It's a public document. Mm-hmm. But to me, I was more interested in the memories than the public document.
Yeah. Well, I think the, do you have anything?
Well, I mean, just like, I guess to complicate that, I mean, like, it's never, I mean, I think the memory is a collective memory of a people, of, like, a nation, kind of. And, I mean, Lee, you were talking about how it's none of the memories of the people Ari interviews help. Because they've all done the same thing as him. They've all blocked this out. And it's all, it's, like, all their memory that needs to be confronted in the end. And, I mean, so, I don't know. I mean, in that way, I guess it's, like, you know, it's sort of answering all of their blockages.
So what about the title then? Right? Like Waltz with Bashir, that moment on the rooftop with the Superman journalist documenting, which guy was it that ran out there? It was
Frankel. Frankel yeah. is the guy who does the waltz. He demands his friend, his I guess that's his underling. Yeah, he demands his gun, and then it's pretty beautiful. He does this madness dance of madness that's almost a waltz in the street, shooting at these unseen bullets that are coming at him. And
so much of the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of the just the sort of like the crazy Leatherface dance with the weapon that's like really frightening. I think also that the waltz doesn't just refer to that, but refers to
the musical structure too.
I think the
repetition.
Yeah, but I was also going to say like the unseen partner of Bashir being Israel in this, and I mean a lot of it was or just these guys. I mean like Israel was, you know, complicit with the this film doesn't need to be political, but I mean like a lot of it is about being this this sort of behind the scenes. Facilitator. There's a part where Ari's talking about how he's just lighting the scene. And I mean, a lot of that's about the production of film and about the production of somehow allowing, facilitating the brutal slaughter of, you know, like thousands of people, or hundreds of people.
Yeah.
It's a little like Darjeeling Limited, too, in the sense that the film has to give you the documented moment of when the characters decided to write the film that you're now watching, right?
Yeah, it's trying to account for itself in that it can only be unaccountable. That's what I roll over in my head a lot.
I love the idea of the waltz as the steps that they're all trying to follow and go through amidst the peril to try to recover. I guess the partner that's lost that could confirm for them where they were and what happened.
Yeah.
But maybe the question of what really happened, I just feel like that's politically dangerous to say, and that the movie doesn't want to say that, but like the question of what really happened does get lost. I mean, if for no other reason than the impossibility of recovering it that they all faced. Mm-hmm. And I thought the camera was happy with that. Because the camera got to, show you those.
Maybe
beautiful...
we can say the frame.
The frame,
Because it's not really a camera. It's it's anime. The really cool thing about animation is like it makes it explicit. Like this was desired to look this way, and it's trying to produce a certain affect, just with its arrangement. So sorry, I cut you off to interject that, but the frame is just—it's all about the frame. It's all about how everything is put into this frame, and how you have to question that first. It's kind of cyclical. There's a lot of repetition of that beautiful sequence of his dream of waking up in the water with the amber flares falling down. I mean, there's so much water in this movie, but it's all bodies of it. It's all oceanic. It's all
bodies in it,
and I mean a lot of birth stuff. You know, like a lot of boys coming out of water naked into a new kind of world that is terrible and sad. And it kind of makes me think that. I mean, there's a really easy way to look at it as like, what kind of inauguration and what kind of birth is it to be a part of that? Like, what are you giving birth to in the what world are you giving birth to with this complicity, and what kind of world are you trying to build? Like, what is Israel? Like, it's like how
a humble podcast. What is Israel?
I'm sorry. It's all an idea for me. I get trapped in concepts too much.
Well, the film traveled all around. I mean, the film certainly wasn't restricted to Israel, hardly at all. In fact, it was unclear when and if they were ever just in Israel. You know, like Ari travels to Holland, and actually, that was my favorite sequence.
Which one? The first one in the snow, or
all of the sequences in Holland? Because I loved how the camera was doing like this. I know you said frame, but the perspective of like, we talked about this too, but like there were scenes that looked exactly like what it looks like to be in a plane and look down as you're taking off and fly away. So being interested in the animation of that like receding perspective frame. And it did that so many times in and around the Holland sequence. It did it later too with his friends swimming back to Israel.
I mean, that's what he does in the last shot of animation. You know, it's this freedom to move, which is really delicious and seductive. It's a very seductive film. It's undeniable. It's fucking beautiful. I mean, you said on the BART platform when you're still kind of rattled, like, I didn't want to look at that. You know, I wanted to keep looking at the beautiful images. And I think, of course, right? Like, that shit is ugly. But I don't know. I think that it knows it's beautiful. Like, you know, it's like, I'm going to give you some syrup. And that's what the Max Richter score is like, too. You know, that sequence of him in the water, that's the most devastating score I've heard in forever. I don't know. It's, maybe not. But,
I also love that moment in the Holland scene when he asks, you know, can I draw you and your son playing in the snow?
Yeah.
And then then the frame moves across and you see the son, like, he's running and shooting this little laser gun, and then he like falls over. And that's right before it like does this crazy zoom and, you know, or crazy like pan out and we end up in another location. But I don't know, there's something about the kid with this toy gun falling in the snow that seems so much. So, I mean, like, just that's what the film's about.
Also,
like,
it was right after his father, his friend gave permission. He was like, you can draw us, just don't film us.
Yeah.
Like, as if the being captured.
Right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But ironic, because the film was so interested in movement that it was almost odd to use animation just for the sake of having complex tracking shots between background and foreground.
Yeah.
And so that it was animating the looming background by way of transmitting this, and like, so I'd love a reading of the film that could tell you that, like, why was what about that movement dynamic, why was that the frame that this story needed?
Well, because it isn't just about that, you know. It's about the feeling that sweep gives you when it's an unbroken shot into a fade. It's so they're talking and they're walking and it's kind of a close-up. It's like a two shot, maybe like a medium close-up of them, and he says, you can draw all you want, just don't film us. And then the camera sort of moves to the frame moves to the right, and you see the boy and he falls and it's great. And then the camera, god, I can't avoid it either. The image, I'm just going to say the image, how about that? The image speeds up and it keeps tracking, it keeps lateralizing, but then it starts to take flight, like you said.
Yeah.
And it starts to track out and map out and give us an aerial view of this land that Carmi owns. And it's all this beautiful whiteness with punctuated by sparse trees. And then that fades into his story of his first memory of the war, which is going to war on a boat. And so the whiteness fades to water at night.
Actually,
and it's the darkest point in the film. And it's the most that's the most beautiful thing to me, is that move from when it's above the boat and then the image just swoops down and then glides alongside the boat all in one tracking shot. There's no cuts. And it's about that descent, I think. That's the thing that I think, since it's a movie about memory as material and as alive in you always, no matter what, even in your ignorance, I think the reason he wanted to do, not the, a reason he wanted to animate it was because memories are so much, so elusive, you know, they're more about a feeling. The dreams are just, they're like, okay, but I just want to say that I think it's the animation is so, it's relying so much on color too in this film. There's so many scenes that are just lit by one color.
Usually two.
Yeah, and it's about that kind of affective resonance more than. And also, you know, he can't go to Beirut and shoot this film. There's a pragmatic reason for this.
But there's always a way. But I think you started to answer the question, because it's the animation was capable of tracking shots that might have been impossible to really do, in at least unbroken without cuts. Yeah. Because it's not it was
like
it
actually Gore Verbinski with all the money in the world.
It actually made me think of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and like all those like aerial shots that would like speed up on the ground but then track up above and come back. Like it was all that like three-dimensional movement.
Yeah. Well, what's funny, I don't really know Thunderdome the way I used to when I was 8, but
I misspoke, actually. I meant the first Mad Max.
The first one?
Yeah.
Not even Road Warrior? Because I only think about... Well, Road Warrior is the second one. Never mind.
Oh, God.
Cinephile, sorry. Pissing contest, yet again on Vinylist Podcast.
No, I'm wrong. It's not a con-
Anyways, Road Warrior, yeah. I like that movie's so vertical. You know, that so much space is traversed vertically along that strip, like the final chase. But this movie isn't really vertical, I don't think. It's pretty lateral. But the aerial plays into that too.
No, I definitely. I mean, one of the other things that I was thinking about in terms of like there's a pretty clear distinction between like foreground and background in the animation.
Yeah, the layers of this
film. Right, and I mean, like it's a lot. I mean, I think that's a pretty clear. Like, there's always one thing. There is like a single thing sort of in the background of this film, and it's the massacre at I keep on forgetting the names.
SNS.
Yeah. Anyways, but I mean, so I mean, like, to sort of,
Nazis.
Right. Well, I mean, that's another thing that's in the background of Nazism and how Israel sort of, not Israel, but how these people feel as though they've fallen into something similar to, like,
the same complicity.
Yeah, right. I mean, and then that's, you know, film as fascism too. Like, it's going to give you these images.
But yeah, no. So I'm just thinking of like a foreground and a background to be like a subject and a foreground that's like a present. Whose background, like memories or the past events or whatever, is sort of well backgrounded, and like, you know, you're not, you know, there's often scenes of like a character looking forward, walking sort of towards the camera, towards the frame, towards the artist, whatever, and then like behind them is, you know, this sort of static background, and it's like moving away from this thing in your past that you're trying to confront at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if we're thinking about therapy as reorientation, then all that lateral movement and spatializing of the world makes a lot of sense. I think that's another reason. The thing that with the combing digital video, probably isn't even digital. It's probably some analog tape.
In the bin, yeah.
Yeah, that's the whites bleed in a way that's really gross. Because there's no blood. Everything's dry and arid and just yeah. I mean, actually, you do see one. You see a guy who kind of looks like the drawing of Homeboy, the journalist, step over a puddle of blood, and it's like, and he's covering his mouth, and so I really feel the stench of that situation. I mean, it's pretty tough to refuse that. I mean, that's coming at you, and you can't ignore it.
You can look away.
Yeah, but and that's the ethical thing, right? Like, where do you look, and how are you going to look?
How can you not look at, you know, I mean...
Yeah, you will not. You have to. I mean, you can... And then even when you're closing your eyes and going to bed, you're looking at something. You're going to fall asleep and hallucinate. That's what he says. But, I mean, there are so many little immediate... I mean, if you're paying attention, everything is, like, right there. You know, that's the Wittgenstein thing I quote a lot. Like, all philosophy does is just gives you everything right there in front of you. And so, yeah, I think that that's sort of what a lot of it comes down to. Like, it just is trying to give you everything, and that's troubling. I said the image is alive in my essay before, and that's all that movie said to me a lot. That isn't all, but I got that a lot. The image is alive, and it's metabolizing itself and you, I mean, like I said, I saw Dirk Bergson in it. If anybody listening knows Bergson, like, I think I'm pretty transparent. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
another one of the parts that we all sort of thought was like a great sort of encapsulation of the film was this moment where these soldiers are trying to take a photograph of themselves as they're going into battle.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite.
Yeah, they're balancing a little camera that's timed to take a shot, and they're balancing it on the shaft of a tank cannon.
Because there was no flat surface that would have worked.
and they all wanted to like be on the tank. So they're like taking it, and like as they're backing away, the camera like slides off, and it's like, I mean, it's that problem of representation again. Like I wonder in the end how much
Camera is the wrong word. Right. That's what this movie's saying.
Yeah, you know? And I mean like, and when it gives you the camera, this thing that like confronts you, that's still not. I mean, like Jen, you were saying one of the things that you were unsatisfied with is that like they were never allowed to work through anything, and the thing that they're given at the end is the thing, maybe the thing that like now will allow them to work through. I don't know. It's like the camera isn't the answer in the end. But like once like a camera or like video or reality, and you know, I mean, that was probably news footage that, you know, becomes another media, another medium. And so it's still not like, I don't think as much as it seems to be coming to some, like, you know, the end sort of denies, anyone's ability to deny the event. And it makes you confront that, but it doesn't really give you, it doesn't shut down. I mean, I like it because it doesn't shut down the film to like being further explored and, you know, further mined for like ideas about like what that means to have different kinds of representation conflict with one another.
It was allegedly the traumatic event, but it's also not the thing that, you know, that his doctor friend told, like, because he was like, oh, you just have to figure out what really happened. But of course, that like that footage can't help him resolve like whether or not he really was in the water coming out, and whether his friend was with him. You know, like all that still has the status of uncertain. And maybe that's fine. Although it's interesting, like all that is, what's the complicity of the camera in that? Like, is it because all of those images got captured on camera that means that they kind of have to coexist and not resolve each other?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't really know either. I'm talking out of my ass just like anybody else.
I'm not.
Speak for yourself. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I am. Like nobody else. I am me. And me. Which... Yep.
I'd like to, I guess I said this about the last film too, but I'd like to think about this a little more and try to, actually much more than Synecdoche, I feel invited to
it's definitely more seductive a film.
Yeah, but
I have thought a lot about Synecdoche. We were getting off of Bart and I said, again, like too many movies. I saw a lot of movies in October, and I didn't write about all of them, clearly. Like, I need to finish some stuff. But I really liked that experience, but it's just too many things to think about. Like, I'm still sort of working over my issues with and kind of admiration for Synecdoche. I think it's a complicated movie in that Synecdoche. I mean, this one, too. And I think this one compromises itself in... I just went through so many tangents. I think that delicious moment of the camera failing, you know, is compromised by this really obvious sequence with a female psychologist who tells a story about a guy who went through the war pretending he was looking at it through a camera, and then the camera failed and his mind failed. And you didn't need to do that, really. I've lost. I'm too tired. There's a lot of movies to think about. There's one of those threads I was talking about. Somebody rescue me, please. Dead air.
I think that's what I would like to. But I want to say something coherent about. So an account of this film where you talk about the camera as failing, but what that means for the animation and the abrupt change in mode at the end. I have some ideas about what to say, but I need to think more.
Yeah.
It's great. Like you come
what
away.
That's what Wittgenstein is about, right? It's about returning to thinking about certain things. Like you don't have one name for one thing. You say ow, and that means so many things. I don't know. There's always something. He has one voice in there saying like one word always signifies other words. You know, that's a pretty standard thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think that applies to images even more. Like, images are diffuse and they move everywhere. And that's another thing this movie tries to do. And that's cool.
And I think what's cool about Gore Verbinski is he's doing a lot of the same things as this movie. But like I think Pirates 2 is fucking amazing. I finally came to realize that, you know, after didn't like it at first. But I really got curious about why this guy I like a lot, who I mentioned before, on the Coen Brothers one, Philippe. Like, I want to know, like, why in the world would this movie turn this guy on so much? And then he told me a little reading of it, and it really makes sense. I invite you to look at, I mean, that movie's everywhere. Go watch it.
And that's what's so satisfying about people who come up with accounts of film. I mean, yeah. You said, you know, words signify other words, and images can only, it's like they can only be exchanged for themselves.
Yeah.
But the what's... But it's still very satisfying to have an image experience translated for you into, yeah, like a yeah. an essay.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's one thing podcasts can do is instead of presenting you with the essay, they can present you with the conversation about what kind of question you would like answered.
And which also, I mean, the great thing David Lynch does, he tells you that sound is an image too. And so there's something there with this thing that you're listening.
He said that first.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody besides David Lynch said that, but I talked about Inland Empire last time, so my tired brain went there. I think this is long enough, probably. Yeah. So, sorry I was out of it, but I think there's some good thoughts, and we hope you think some good thoughts, and smile, and don't
and
get...
be warned, you know? Yeah. I wish someone would have warned me about the end.
Yeah, I guess you didn't know I had seen it before, and I didn't tell you about it, but...
I just felt a little raped, you know?
Don't get raped. How about that? We'll end on that. Just don't get raped.
Well.